John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. 9 minutes after 8 o'clock, and good morning, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Good morning, John. Sunny day, going to be a nice weekend.
Yes, indeed. It has been a raucous week, hasn't it, here been in town?
Was something going on this week?
you made the decision on Tuesday to take the tents down, and was there something that triggered it, or was it just the whole event?
You know, I think you have to give people time to express themselves. If you had tried to do it earlier, it's not clear to me that the courts would have permitted it. And in fact, in Boston, I think they were stopped from taking the tents down by the courts. Courts want to be convinced that you are protecting people's First Amendment rights, and that the argument that there is a safety hazard is a legitimate one. And in this case, we convinced the judge of both. And I thought he was correct in his ruling. We have let people back into the park. They can come, they can stand around, they can protest, but the park has to be open to everyone and to be used for the purposes that the original agreement with the owner was called for, and that lets everybody do it. And I think one of the surest signs that we did the right thing is that no one in this city, as far as I know, is calling for a return of the tarps, tents, and encampment of Zuccotti Park. Now, there are a few protesters that are probably calling for it, but I don't know any elected officials that have stood up. In fact, I know Howard Wolfson was talking to somebody and said, you know, there are a lot of candidates running for mayor. What would they have done, explicitly? And they all say, well, you know, this, that, but nobody's willing to stand up.
Well, of course, because they don't have to be. They don't have to step in it.
You know, it was the right thing at the right time, and that people had a chance to express themselves yesterday. And as you know, I've never been about looking back. Let's go forward from here. There are problems in the country. The ways to fix those problems, you can make yourself heard, which I think has been done, but now it's time to get back and build our economy and create the jobs, good-paying jobs that people need, make sure our budget is in balance so that we don't have problems like they do in Europe, make sure we keep making investments in research and infrastructure and those kinds of things, and let's get on with it.
During the demonstrations, there have been hundreds arrested. I'm assuming that most of them just got appearance tickets, but then again, there were seven police officers yesterday that were injured.
I think yesterday, the number I got, you know, it changes each 2 seconds, but it was about 250-odd people, only three felonies, 80-odd misdemeanors, and the rest were violations that you get summonses or desk tickets, as a lot of them are called. And, you know, it's from pushing and that sort of thing and refusing to obey the police instructions. But in all fairness, last night, the culmination of all of this was scheduled to be a big march across the Brooklyn Bridge. There was a march. Unlike 2 or 3 weeks ago, people obeyed the instructions from the police, and they stayed on the walkway. They did not shut down traffic flow over the bridge. And I think that one of the noticeable things was a vast percentage of the people were union members protesting, some private unions and then some municipal unions. And they had, you know, organized signs and leadership and that sort of thing. So it really wasn't the protesters that have been in Zuccotti Park or that you see around the country. This was just an opportunity for a bunch of unions to complain or to protest or whatever they want to do. I think some of them should step back, and particularly municipal unions, and realize that their salaries come from this city being able to attract companies and investors and people that pay taxes. And we love to have high net worth individuals come here because they pay a lot more taxes, and that's where we get the money to have the world's greatest police department and fire department and sanitation department and teachers corps. And, you know, with the city's doing well and want to keep it going, and we have to pay for it.
All week long, I've heard numerous people remark on just the patience and the professionalism that the New York Police Department shows in situations like that.
I don't know why people are surprised. It is a department that is particularly well-led. I think, I don't know every police commissioner going back in history, but Ray Kelly has been an exemplary police commissioner. His knowledge of international affairs is really important. His knowledge of how the police department works. Remember, he's held every single rank in the police department from entry level all the way up to commissioner, and he's been commissioner twice. And I've always found his judgment and understanding, and he's tough, but he has compassion, and he's what you want. So it's, and then you take a look at the officer's corps. And then yesterday I visited a 24-year-old police officer, 1 year on the job in the hospital. His thumb had been cut. Somebody threw something at him. And I walked away, and another one of his friends were there, same age, same time on the job. And I walked away thinking, this city is so lucky to be able to attract people like that. They love the job. They love what they're doing. They feel a great responsibility to keeping people safe. And, you know, they're human beings like everybody else, and they want good life for their families and for them, and good careers for themselves.
What's your assessment of this group in Zuccotti Park? You think they're finished? Is it over?
Well, you know, I don't think that the things that they were trying to protest about have gone away. I think what you have to step back and say is, number one, there was no one unifying theme the way there was in the 60s against Vietnam, with the exception that there's an awful lot of people, and not just in the United States, but around the world, who feel that they're being left out and that things aren't going as well as they should be. And you see the chaos in Europe and the financial sector. You see the jobless there and the jobless here. You see our deficit out of control, and us, when you see these debates and they don't talk about things that are important, they talk about things that make no sense, certainly not in anybody's mind or that really matter. And so people say, I don't like it. Something's wrong. Now, they don't know how to coalesce and get the message out, but that doesn't mean that what they're complaining about isn't real. But I think we have to sit back and say, okay, that's true. Now let's go fix it. Let's balance the budget. Let's make the investments. Let's create jobs. Let's get the jobs to come where the people are. Make sure that the people can get the jobs and can do the work. And I think the big challenge, and I said it yesterday at a conference on immigration, is that we have to solve the problem that a lack of education really prevents you from doing well, if you will, in the modern world. Now, that's not totally, there's always somebody that's lucky, but fundamentally you are starting to see what we keep talking about, but nobody ever really stopped to think, oh my God, it's real, there's going to be real effects. And that is that if you don't have an education, your options are so much more limited. And so you see the gap that's growing between those who are unemployed and perhaps unemployable and those who have great careers. And that gap is only going to grow, John, unless we can figure out a ways to do something. And it starts with improving education, which, as you've watched for the last 10 years, we've made enormous steps, but nowhere is near where you want to be. And it's two forward and one back. And not everybody values education. It's a lot of politics involved in it. And that's true across this country and probably around the world, but certainly across this country.
All right. To your point about the group's unifying point, that being that there are problems with the economy and opportunity and the like. Next Wednesday is the deadline for this super committee. What do you think happens when they don't, or if they don't come up with a solution?
If they do not, there's in theory these draconian...
But I don't think that will happen, do you?
I was going to say, they're not supposed to happen for a year. And I don't think anybody thinks that during that year Congress won't say, oh, we can't do that, which is why I gave a speech in Washington a couple weeks ago saying you just have to. A small solution to the problem is not good for this country because it will postpone the day of reckoning. We have to balance our budget. And there's two simple ways to do it. The president can do something with his pen. He can veto any bill to extend any part of the Bush-era tax cuts. And he says, well, I'll end Bush-era tax cuts for the very wealthy. That's not politically doable, and everybody should share in this. So he can do something on the revenue side, and Congress can do their part. They should just pass the Simpson-Bowles plan of cuts, which was done with an enormous amount of research by a Republican and a Democrat who have great credibility and had a wonderful staff. And yes, you probably could make both things better, but these are things where Congress and the president, yes or no, up or down, the whole thing or nothing, and then that would give enormous confidence to investors and to employers and to families to go out and buy a new house, take a vacation, spend some money, create a business, hire people. It is not the level of taxes that is the problem here. It is that people are concerned and they don't have any confidence. And, you know, I know people say, oh, no, I don't like wealthy people. Let's get even with them. That doesn't help anybody. Quite the contrary, it hurts. They say, you know, well, we should keep providing services whether we need them or not and whether we can afford them or not. That's just not viable. And you see Europe, it really does, deficits in the end really do matter. But this is all about confidence. And I keep saying this, the president should stand up and say, I don't care if it's an election year. This is what I'm going to do. This is right for the country. And anything else, I'll never get through Congress. So let's just do this. And Congress should pull together and say, look, we're going to have an election. I'm a Democrat. I'm a Republican. Whatever I am, this is patriotism, Trump's partisanship, and they should stand up and together just pass this. And I think everybody would be a winner, whereas in the current situation, nobody's a winner, neither side of the aisle, neither end of Pennsylvania Avenue.
Cold weather is here. That makes it obviously more difficult for those that find their home on the street here. I know that you were going to put in some new rules on whether or not you qualify for shelter.
Well, actually, they're not new rules. We have, for the last 15 years, for families, which is the vast bulk of the people in the homeless system, interviewed them to see if they have private alternatives. If their families can take care of them, there's no reason why the public should take care of them. The public doesn't have the money to do everything we want, and there are a lot of people that need help. So for 15 years with families, we have interviewed people, and we only provide shelter to those who really don't have any alternatives. And now we're saying we've got to do the same thing for singles. These are either men or women, more men than women in all fairness, who come in without kids. And we want to give them shelter if the alternative is living on the streets. But if they can live with a family member, you know, families have an obligation and they should take care of their own. And if they absolutely can't, then the public is willing, I think, to reach into their pocket. But the public's not willing to reach into their pockets and do it if they think they're being scammed.
That seems reasonable. What's the criticism?
Beats me, as they say, but there is no prohibition on implementing this, but a legal aid lawyer brought a lawsuit challenging our right to implement it. The judge said she wanted time to consider the issue, so we agreed to hold off implementation to give the judge time for a full review. And I think December 9th, if I remember, we have the next hearing. But I think the judge will, in the end, let us go forward. But your question's well put. I mean, ask those people who are against it why that's not reasonable. I don't think, John, if the public doesn't feel that aid to the less fortunate is given and to those only those who need it, and that there, if they don't feel that we've eliminated people who are trying to scam the system, if they don't feel that the programs if they feel that programs don't work, they're not going to be there willing to keep supporting it. And you know, it's like fingerprinting for food stamps. The data is very clear. There was an enormous amount of double and triple and quadruple dipping put in 10, 15 years ago. I think it was during Rudy's time, fingerprinting. And all of a sudden, there was, of course, no fraud because you couldn't do it. The fingerprints stopped you from double dipping. People say, well, if there's no fraud, then we should get rid of the fingerprinting. But that's why you get the fraud right back. And people that say, wait a second, you know, fingerprinting is demeaning. We have 330,000 city employees, John, including me, and everybody gets fingerprinted. So if you work for the city and help the city, you get fingerprinted. If you get the benefits of the city and you get some help from the city, not unreasonable to get fingerprinted just to make sure that you really deserve what we're giving.
I read that this is a good place to be a hotelier, New York City.
We're going to hit 90,000 hotel rooms this year. I was over in Queens. There were 17 hotels in the area. I think 10 years ago, there were, if there were any, I'd be surprised, but virtually none. The hotel's occupancy is way up. There are no deals anymore. Hotels are getting decent rates, employs a lot of people, and it comes from the city being safe and clean and the culturals and all the things that attract tourists here. We want tourists and business people and people that come for education and whatever, medical care, to come and to stay in our hotels. And there's some great deals. There's an enormous number of hotels, John, in Brooklyn and in Queens. It's a new hotel in Harlem. I was on Staten Island yesterday afternoon for a luncheon, and the Hilton Hotel there is building a whole nother wing right next door. This is a popular place, and it creates an enormous number of jobs. Tourism is the big industry that's replaced all the manufacturing industries.
Very good news. Now, I understand that you've got something on the schedule here. You've got to go see Regis.
I am going. Well, number one,
I'm a little hurt.
I'm hurt. Regis was hurt. He fell off of a motorbike yesterday.
I saw that way in front of Letterman's place.
I'm going to have to talk to him. I mean, he was wearing a helmet from the pictures, so that was good.
But Letterman was not, so I think maybe a summons is due, Mr.
I don't know. I'm not going to see Letterman this morning. Just Regis. And, you know, I mean, there have been seven mayors, I think, before me waiting for Regis to...
to leave.
to leave. And I'm going to be... all kidding aside, he's a great guy.
He's
a lot of fun. He's always been he's there when the city needs him, so I'm going to go and say thanks.
All right, we'll go have a good time, and we will not talk next Friday. I'm going to be away, but what can I tell you? We'll push it off for 2 weeks.
Happy Turkey Day,
Macy's well.
Parade on Thanksgiving. Thanks to Macy's, great corporate citizen, the fireworks, the Thanksgiving Day Parade. They keep doing great stuff, and I make sure I shop at Macy's and Bloomingdale's to say thank you.
All right, and have yourself a good Thanksgiving, you and the family.
All the best, John.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Michael Bloomberg this morning here on the John Gambling Show, 26 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let me throw it over to J.J. Kennedy.